Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Sue Rice, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you today, my friend?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Look, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. And I've been wanting to have this conversation with you on the podcast for the longest time. Now, Sue, we do a lot of work together and you're well known around the marketing world as an expert copywriter. You've got an incredible pedigree in that space. I wanted to just ask you, as we start our conversation, a little bit how you fell into that kind of work, because not many people finish high school and say, you know what, I'm going to become an expert copywriter. So how did you find your way into that space?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I've always loved to write. I've always loved words. And basically, sometimes I think your passions and what you're good at kind of lead you. And I went to Stanford University and then did my graduate work in international economics with Johns Hopkins. And when I left, I was well-educated, probably fairly unemployable. And I ended up landing in New York City on Madison Avenue. And my first job was with Ogilvy & Mather Advertising,
wow,
which is sort of known as the place to learn how to copyright.
Totally.
So that's how it all started. From there, I left Ogilvy eventually and went to BBDO. And they kind of miraculously sent me with a few other men to run their BBDO European headquarters in Paris, which is why I live in France. I eventually left the agency world, but I stayed here. And then I kind of parlayed the copywriting. I should say that I was always doing two things. I was doing the copywriting, but I was also always very strategic. That's sort of how, and I started my own agency, giving strategic advice to companies like Nike and Lego and really big companies. And then, of course, as the world changed and the internet became more front and center, I sort of shifted my client base to smaller companies and entrepreneurs. And so that's sort of my journey in 30 seconds or less.
Yeah. And of course, you are coming to us from France. And I know for a fact that you've got a lovely fire burning at the moment as we're speaking, because in Australia, it's very hot. So no need for chimneys or anything of that nature today, because we're in the midst of it. But I wanted to ask you, France, and this is a little unrelated to our conversation, but what is it about living in France that you love so much?
It's a great question, because at this point, pretty much, you know, most of my clients are not in France. And so I'm basically here for the lifestyle. But I feel like France affords a quality of life that's pretty difficult to find anywhere else. And I guess it's just sort of the whole culture is built around sort of living in the present. And I think it's just a nice reminder to all of us that with all the goals that we have, that we want to do, all that's great. But sometimes it's also good just to enjoy the traditions, the daily traditions, the seasonal traditions, from eating a nice meal with people that you love to going to the open market, all those things. I guess I feel like it keeps me really grounded.
Yeah.
I'm actually really, really happy in this lifestyle. I know it's probably not for everyone, but it's a lovely lifestyle. So yeah, that's why I also feel like, it just again, this is a bit of an aside, but I feel like it's a little bit of a philosophy I have of life, which is that to embrace paradox. And I love the idea that I'm working in this online marketing world and working with all these amazing entrepreneurs and people building up their lives and their businesses on the one hand. And then there's this sort of backdrop of, in France, you know what is going to happen every day,
yeah.
Right? It's just like, yeah, sort of, it's not that the script doesn't change that much. And there's a good side to both those kinds of worlds, right? Of creating your future and your destiny. And then the other world, which is very much steeped in history and in how things have always been done.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like that paradox and living that paradox.
So that's a really interesting segue for me to come in and talk about the work that you do, because you mentioned that things do change in parts of your life, and then you've got other parts, the Parisian or the French parts, which are more structured, more stable the way they've always been. But in the world of marketing, it seems to me in some ways that things are changing and yet staying the same as well. And I'm wondering, you know, from the world of marketing, you've had a lot of experience in that. As you said in your background, you know, working at Ogilvy is incredible. That is, that's just unbelievable. And then working with such large brands, Nike, Lego, and others. What are the things that you've seen change in the marketing world? And interestingly, what are the things that are the same?
I think, well, I mean, the obvious change is the whole digital world.
Yeah.
Which, but oddly, it's what's interesting to me is that when I first went out on my own, the whole thing I was doing with companies like Lego and the CEO of Lego, people like the board of Nike, what we were doing was I was trying to show them the real face of their consumer. We would go out on these worldwide trips and we would do these amazing studies about what people were really thinking, what people really cared about. And I feel like marketing, there's always been a little bit of a gap, and it still exists, that where people don't really understand that the people we're dealing with, whether it's at the dental practice or whether it's people that you just deal with virtually, people want to know who we are, and they want to be treated like individuals and as human beings, right? And that we don't need to present ourselves as this perfect thing, right? I think there's this sort of universal concern on the part of companies of any size that we need to project ourselves as perfect. And actually, people want to see us as vulnerable. They want to see us as human beings. They want to be seen as human beings, and they want to know us as human beings, if that makes sense. So like there's that whole adding that humanity in there, if you will.
I think that makes perfect sense. And it's funny because, you know, you and I do some work together, and one of the things we talk about is trying not to be anything other than what we are. And I really appreciate that in the work that you do. And I also really appreciate the strategy and the thinking that goes behind everything that you do, because when you put together an email campaign, which we're going to talk a lot more about later, because that's your sweet spot, that's your wheelhouse, there's this authenticity and genuineness that really shines through in all that you do, as well as really being super strategic around it as well. So I really like the blend of strategy and authenticity, and I think you do that really well. I do want to talk a little bit about email marketing, Sue, because that is something that you're very famous for. You're really well known in the marketing space, not just digital, but you know, in the copywriting world generally. I wanted to ask you about email marketing and dentistry, because I've been around marketing for a long time now. I've had some experience in digital marketing. And I remember years ago thinking digital marketing would only take a little while to come to dentistry, and it's kind of taken a bit longer. But part of that, a subset of that, is email marketing. And I was talking to a marketer here in Australia a little while ago, and I was saying, I think email marketing is an underutilized or even a non-utilized element of a marketing strategy. And he sat and told me to my face he thought that was not ever going to happen. And then 2 months later, he's selling email marketing packages. So I'm wondering, I'm wondering what your thoughts are around the utilization of email, because you hear at some conferences email's dead, but I don't think it is.
Well, if you look at the statistics, it's just email is anything but dead. It's growing at like 20-25% a year. It's like literally trillions. I can't even imagine what that number means, but trillions of emails are sent every year, which is actually also a problematic. We can get circle around back to that in a minute, because it is a challenge to stand out in the inbox. But, you know, email is the one asset that any company of any size, any practice of any size actually owns. You don't own your social media presence. You know, you're at the whim of what Mark Zuckerberg wants to do tomorrow, or some of these platforms just close down. Yeah. So it's the one asset that you have. And the other thing, it's the one place. I like to think of it as sort of that quiet corner where you can talk to people one-on-one, but at the same time at scale. So and there's no other place that you can do that. It's sort of like, if I think of social media, sort of the crowded, noisy cafe where everyone's yelling and screaming, and the email is when they knock on the door and they come into your living room and you have a chat with a coffee.
Yeah, nice.
Right? So I think that email has huge potential for people who own their own dental practices, huge potential. And not just in terms of following up. I mean, one of the things, of course, is following up with people to make sure that they come back for their annual, their biannual checkup, that kind of thing. But I also think it's a place where what you can start cementing a relationship that goes beyond the half an hour, the hour that you might spend with them when they come into your office, right? Where you can add a little bit of your own personality, and you can, and it's, I think it's a place obviously where you can, I mean, statistics say that at least 30% of your revenue, no matter what you're doing, should come from email. And that's conservative.
Wow.
Most of the people I know, it's, and this is literally true, in anywhere between 50 to 80% of their revenue comes from email. So why anyone would think email is dead, why anyone would think email is not important, it kind of bewilders me. The Wall Street Journal, in an article in October 2009, there was a big giant headline saying email was dead, basically.
Yeah.
They didn't, that wasn't the exact words. In 2019, basically the same, maybe it was January 2019, so 10 years later, there was another headline saying email, basically everyone's returning to email. It's the new hot thing. So it's kind of like email, everyone thinks of email as like the boring stepsister of the Instagrams of the world. But I like to think of it as the boring stepsister who's now stepping out with a really, really beautiful, amazing evening gown. So she's looking great.
Cinderella.
Now. She is Cinderella par excellence, right? Absolutely. She just needs to find that little slipper, that glass slipper, right?
Totally. So let's talk about email, because you've mentioned some of the benefits of emailing and why people might want to include it. You mentioned that, you know, you can inject some personality, you can have that one-on-one conversation.
Also set and forget.
Yeah, well, right? That's exactly
so
right.
Once you have it, well, you know, it's a minimum amount of work. If you think about it, once you have a nice set of emails, you put them out there, and it's like having your front desk working for you 24/7. It never gets sick. It never complains.
And it does it properly every time. It delivers consistently.
Yeah, and you
right?
You don't even have to give it benefits. It just gives you benefits.
Exactly. And it doesn't argue with you. How good's that?
Okay. No talking back.
Unreal.
If it talks back, you just delete it.
I love that. So I want to ask you a little bit about sending emails, because there'll be people listening to this podcast who have probably just broken out into a cold sweat at the thought of emailing their patient base or emailing a database of leads. What sort of thoughts might you have around that? Because I think that must occur in other businesses as well. What if I email my customers or my patients in this case and I annoy them? How likely is that to occur?
By the way, the fear of pressing send is probably going to be up there with, you know, public speaking.
Yeah, totally.
People really are afraid of their list. If their list is 10 people, 100 people, 10,000 people, everyone's afraid of their list because they're afraid of exactly that. They're afraid of the dreaded unsubscribe button and even worse, the spam complaints, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's a way of writing, which kind of comes back to some of the other things I said, of being human, of being open, of being regular about your emails, right? And mm-hmm. not just promoting products with them, which is what most people do.
Yeah.
If you're also trying to build, it needs to be building relationships first and then revenue. But as long as you are relaxed about it and regular about it, you can minimize the unsubscribes and the spam complaints. But I will say, I think everyone, it's sort of like in life, you need to be prepared. There will be people out there that just will unsubscribe.
Yeah.
You will get that. So you just sort of have to deal with that. Like we just need to deal with that right here, right now, right? it happens to everyone that there will be a certain very small percentage of people who say, you know, I don't really want to receive these emails.
Totally.
And that's okay.
Now, I have to say, Sue, I check my unsubscribes probably more than I should. No, I do. I really do. And interestingly, the other day, someone unsubscribed and I felt a little bit hurt by it. But it's just something you have to get over, right? Something that over time you kind of go, okay, that's just the way it is. That's the nature of the beast and that's okay.
Yeah, I think that it is. That's what I'm trying to say. It's just the nature of the beast. You need to understand. It's just like, and it's, sometimes people unsubscribe. I know I unsubscribe sometimes just simply because I know you've seen how many emails are in my inbox that you can understand why. I've just got thousands and thousands of emails coming in literally every day. I need to. So sometimes that happens. But I think a lot of times the unsubscribes happen because it just isn't, the emails are flat. They're just promotional. That's all they are. Yeah. And like I said, I think that emails can absolutely build your business, but people need to rethink the email proposition and think, I wouldn't go to a dinner party with five of my friends and sell them teeth whitening. That wouldn't happen, right? So think about it like that. Yeah. You might end up selling them teeth whitening, but not right there at that dinner party, right?
No, totally.
So yeah, because you need to pave the way. Like in any relationship, you need to pave the way for that next step. Having said that, I mean, one of the things that you can do and when you nurture leads that are on your list is that you can send them pertinent content about, for example, a particular procedure you might specialize in your practice. But you need to be sure that one of the errors that people make, Jesse, is that they just send whatever. They just find a good article and they share that. But you need to be very strategic about what it is that you're sending in the inbox. Because whilst you want to make it feel like you're sharing information that's interesting to them, it needs to have a purpose for you too, right? So even if you're not going to be selling that teeth whitening this month, and maybe you're going to be having a special in April, you need to have a reason why you're sending out information about the best ways to whiten your teeth or the options that you have when it comes to whitening your teeth. You don't just send it out of the blue. It needs to be setting up the next step in the conversation, whatever that is. It might be an invitation to call your front desk. It might be, right, filling out a form. You don't necessarily have to go directly to the sale, but you need to think 3 minutes about why it is that you're sending an email out. But the biggest error, most people don't get to that stage, in my opinion. Most people just go, just look at your inbox, right?
Yeah.
Most of it is just buy.
Totally.
Buy me now. But so with a tiny bit of extra energy, I mean, I map these out for clients all the time. You just think about what it is that you want to do in the next 3, 6, 12 months. And then you design an email strategy around that. And then it's very seamless. And you know, you can actually have fun with it. You know, there's no reason. You can send fun cartoons and images. And I think people are very formal about their emails. And it's like all of a sudden, you know how when you meet someone who's been in corporations for 50 years, they have this way of speaking.
Yeah.
It's like, who talks like that?
Well, that's the thing.
And so then people do that with emails too, right? It's like, no one writes to me like that. Don't write like that.
Well, that's thing. It's like dentists tend to be pretty conservative sorts, right? So do they write, what's the voice that they're trying to find? Obviously, they're going to use their own voice, but that balance between being professional and being vulnerable, how do you find that balance where you're kind of vulnerable enough without being oversharing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that as someone who does a lot of email copywriting for other people, I think everyone has their own voice, right?
Yeah.
So I personally, to be honest with you, I tend on the side of being a little bit more conservative. I'm not way out there in my own emails, and that's okay. That doesn't mean that everyone has to be like the dental practice owner clown, right?
Yeah,
you can
totally.
Be professional.
Yep.
But it's just that even in being professional, you can be warm. You can be caring about what other people. The thing is I think where it gets stiff is we think, oh, I have to present myself this way. Maybe a better way of thinking about the email is, what does the person that I'm talking to need?
Yeah.
Because they have their fears too. I mean, it's no secret. People are afraid of going to dentists. They're afraid of being of the pain. They're afraid of what they're going to find out, right? I remember for years I was convinced that I had cancer, right? I mean, I think you just like things in your head about going to the dentist. And I think maybe addressing some of those fears,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
And maybe just sort of reassuring people. And because people always expect the worst because they're not at the dental office every single day. So I think it's about that. One of the tips that I give, Jesse, which is like so dead easy, mm-hmm. is if you're going to write emails, there's a million little apps that you can have where you just dictate. You can write an email by speaking.
Yeah.
Right. Hi, this is Dr. So-and-so. This is what this is what I was thinking about today. I'd like to share this video with you, whatever, right? And when just by speaking it, you will end up having a more relaxed, informal, conversational tone.
Yeah, nice.
So you dictate it, have someone transcribe it. An email shouldn't be super long anyway. And then you kind of maybe just make sure that it makes sense and you upload it and press send. That's it.
I love that. So, ladies and gents, that's a fantastic tip, Sue. So, ladies and gents, make sure you take note of that. Speak your email before you write your email and you'll get that tone right. Now, Sue, there's a couple of things I just want to talk about really briefly before we get into another meaty piece. In dentistry, there is some challenges with integration of CRMs and practice management software. So, you might have a lead come through your website and that person, it's very hard to tag them and bring them in from lead to patient, right? So that's a bit of a challenge. So we've got two systems generally operating in parallel. You'll have your CRM for your leads, and then you'll have your practice management software to deal with your existing patients. So I wanted to talk a little bit about emails for leads versus emails for patients, content, and all the rest of it. Can you just walk me through a couple of things that you think are key points that people should be aware of that if they're crafting an email for someone who visits their website, perhaps they download an opt-in of some sort. Maybe it's the guide to tooth whitening or 7 steps to white teeth or something like that. What sort of things do we need to be mindful of for leads versus patients or existing clients?
Okay. So the first thing I would say, this is not to get everyone demoralized about this, but what studies show us is that 80% of leads don't convert into patients or customers or whatever, right?
Yep.
So, and the reason they don't convert is they remain only leads, right? That no one does anything with them.
Totally.
They download the thing and then it's, radio silence. So, that's the bad news. And the good news is that through email, you can take those leads and you can nurture them. You can warm them up. You can let them get to know you. Do all the things that we just talked about, reassure them a little bit about the process. There's a whole host of things you can do from if you write blog posts. That's one of the things that you do. You can share those. When you can have like what I call sort of movie teaser type emails where it's, you just sort of kind of, get people enticed to go watch a video or a blog post or whatever it is. And, if you don't have the bandwidth to create that kind of content, you can also just share things. You can find things on YouTube and just simply share them, right? So you don't have to be creating all this on your own, which is another great tip, by the way.
Yeah.
But, it's a way of just kind of getting the dialogue. You could send out an email, which is basically say, do you have a question? Ask me a question. And then people write in. You have someone collecting the emails and they ask the questions. It's a great way to know what your leads are interested in. And
exactly.
Then you send out another email where you're just basically answering the question. And again, you can do that with your dictaphone, right? Okay, I just got a question from John in wherever, and he wants to know what actually is a root canal.
Yeah.
And you explain, are you with me?
Yep.
And you can have a whole series on that. By the way, whilst the nurturing of leads is super important, I don't see why you can't share that kind of information with your current customers,
exactly.
too.
That's exactly what I think, too.
Right? Because all that is stuff that people would be interested in knowing. And also, and if you don't want to even transcribe, why don't you just do your audio and post your audio somewhere and have them hear you, and then they hear your voice and they get to know you that way.
Yeah, I think that's
gold. It's super simple.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that my experience is that I think people overcomplicate some stuff, right? I think sometimes we look to have perfection where really, and I am all in favor of perfection in a sense. I'm all in favor of excellence and doing things really well. But there is a place where we can record an answer with our phone or record a quick video or, you know, whatever it happens to be and send it out that way. And what I really like about what you've just said too is people get to know you. And that comes back to the relational piece that we spoke about earlier. People do business with people and they don't do business with these kind of cardboard cutouts. It's real human beings.
I mean, this is what I was saying to the Legos and Nikes of the world 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? People don't want, what's interesting is, yes, when we are looking after someone and they're in our dental chair, yeah, we should be aiming for perfection. I don't have a problem with that. Just like when I'm writing, I'm aiming for perfection. But when I'm talking to people and communicating, I feel like it's much stronger if it's not perfect because I come off as a human being. And so, and that's what people want. They, of all the places in the world they want to be received by a human being, it's at their dental office.
Yeah.
if there's no other place, I mean, I travel really far to go to my dentist. I feel like he's like an hour away from me. And the reason I go that far is because he's like a really cool human being, right?
Totally.
And I walk in and I also, but he's competent, right? So it's not that you don't want to be, you want to be super competent and a perfectionist at your trade, whatever that is. But in your communications, it's okay. In fact, I think nowadays, if it's too manicured, it's like, oh my God, it looks so 80s, right? It's like, no, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love a little bit of imperfection. I don't like something to have super high production quality all the time. There is a place for it, of course, but there is absolutely a place for the ums and the ahs and the missteps and all of those things that go into normal communication. So I want to talk a little bit about campaigns and the different types of campaigns because, again, what will come up for some people listening to this audio, they'll be going, okay, well, I understand that email can be a really effective part of my marketing toolkit. I want to be able to market using email, whether it's lead nurturing or whether it's, you know, communicating with my existing patients. What sort of campaigns might a dental practice employ to be able to effectively use email?
Okay, so before I talk about the type of campaigns, I just want to underline something I've already said, which is if you're doing like seasonal campaigns or a campaign to highlight a particular treatment that you offer in your practice, just make sure there's balanced out with something that is a bit more nurturing, if that makes sense. So it's not just every time they see your from line that they know it's going to be another promotion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So having said that, now this is going to sound like I'm completely contradicting myself. I have a rule. Every email that goes out, there is a call to action link for people to buy something. So even if I'm doing a nurturing campaign about the ABCs of whatever it is, some kind of product, I always, even if it's a informational email, it will have a call to action and the person will be given an option to buy, always, like 100% of the time. But the nature of the emails shouldn't always be hard-hitting promotion, if that makes sense, because
very
it's a
soft.
Great way to turn people off. But so in terms of types, oh, there's so many types of campaigns. You have all the seasonal campaigns from Valentine's Day to New Year's to Halloween to, I don't know, the back to school or the beginning of summer, or I know you guys are like upside from us.
Yeah.
And you can have things like birthday, you know, if you take their birthdays, when, you know, if you know what their birthday is, you can have a birthday campaign for an individual person. You can have asking them to refer a friend or even asking them to give their feedback about their experience so that you can use those as a testimonial on your website.
Mm-hmm.
I love surveys and polls. Polls are great because it's like one question. Hey, I'd love your thoughts on X, right?
Yep.
And it's just a great way to get people interacting with you. You can even do quizzes right now. There's a lot of software that you can put together really easy quizzes and surveys, but not surveys that are 25 questions long that's going to take. These, everything should happen in like 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, totally.
People are busy.
Yep.
If you have a long survey, just pick it up. Yeah, that's all. Yeah, and then, of course, there's all the nurturing we've talked about. And then you can just have service-specific campaigns as well. There's the follow-up. There's also another one that a lot of people forget to do is to reactivate. So you'll have on your list of people that you've noticed haven't come in to see you, they haven't opened your emails, and you can have a reactivation campaign that gives them a special incentive to either start opening your emails again or come actually into your office. Or you can take these and you can have like a hybrid. So you could have a Halloween email that is highlighting, now, some kind of service that you have, that makes sense. So you could combine some of these together.
Yeah. So it could
be. Or a quiz that gives them a special discount on a particular service.
Yeah. So I really like that. So I want to ask you a little bit, because you're talking about deals and discounts and all the rest of it. And I know there'll be some people listening to this going, but I don't really want to offer discounts. I don't want to be known as the deal guy running more boutique premium kind of offering. How do you maintain that premium element and still reactivate without feeling like you've got to resort to discounts or special offers or something else?
So just to be candid and upfront about it, I'm really not a fan on discounts.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, like if you have six campaigns a year, I would say maximum one should have a discount, maximum.
Yeah.
Because the problem is you have a discount every time, you just train people to wait for the next discount, right?
Yep.
And also, it's also a branding thing. It just makes the brand a little bit less premium. You don't want to do that.
No.
Right?
Totally.
So the best, but having said that, and having been involved in hundreds of email campaigns at this point, it is clear to me, crystal clear, that people do not act unless there's some kind of scarcity.
Yes.
So I do, like I said, I always have a call to action. But I can have, imagine that someone sent out 12 emails in a month, which we can talk about how many emails you should send in a minute. But, you know, depending on what industry you're in, just imagine though, someone has sent 12 emails out in a month, and only three of those are promotion specific, right?
Yep.
Every single time that I put scarcity in there, and I normally do it with time, either time or quantity.
Mm.
So it's either going to be, if you don't act by midnight on X date, you no longer have this available to you, or we only have a certain number of spaces.
Yeah.
And those are the two ways that I prefer to do it. I'd be super conservative with discounts just because you don't want to train your list to wait for the 30% off or whatever it is that you're offering.
Well, that's really interesting because we're recording this in December. And it wasn't that long ago that Black Friday was on, the Black Friday sales. And I know for a fact, everyone was hanging out for Black Friday sales. And it's one of those things, if you want to run a premium offering, I agree with you 100%. So I think you're spot on the money where you run the risk of training your list to wait for those things. Like people wait for a Black Friday kind of arrangement. And it's a bit nasty.
Yeah, but they're always disappointing, I find, the Black Friday.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, the other thing that you can do, of
bonuses.
Course, is you could add a bonus.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I was going to ask you about.
So you could, another way of getting people to act is the bonus will go away. We have X number of bonuses, whatever it is, it's an additional, perhaps an additional service or whatever. And that's another way. But the point is, if they don't act, whatever this wonderful, irresistible thing is, will go away. If I could just make one marketing strategic note about that.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest issues that people have in getting people to act is they don't think through the offers, right?
Mm.
So, I mean, and you sometimes don't know. Like, so I've had people who have had the exact same offer, and then I'm not suggesting everyone does this, but they've added like an engraved coffee cup or something, right?
Yeah.
And the conversion goes from, 3% to 15%.
Yeah, it's insane.
And so sometimes it's like this insane, completely like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes, and it could be something as simple as that, that's not, that's inexpensive to make. It's just a little added extra that has a little bit of personality that people would like to have. And it just, So it could be something unrelated to a service is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be dental, right? I think that's the thing is no. Be a bit creative, start thinking outside the box. And
it could be a bag. It could be, you know, that has something on it, or you could be a mug. It could be, I'm not suggesting, I like premium.
I like
things that are premium. So it shouldn't be cheesy either, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's, you know, you can have really elegant what they call premiums that people really, really want to have. Mm. And it will be enough to induce them to come into your office or get an appointment or get another treatment.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be the treatment, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, so we spoke or we alluded to earlier in our conversation about cut through and how crowded people's inboxes are. So there's a couple of questions I wanted to ask you about that. Things like open rates, and you know, I know that varies a lot from one type of profession to another or one industry to another, but you know, what is that a metric that's worth measuring? And I guess, and I think it is, but from there, how do you cut through? How do you get your email to stand out from the thousands that are bombarding people's inboxes?
I mean, that's a really big question. Let me just go through that. So in terms of open rates.
Yeah, in 25 words rates, or less. Okay.
In 25, yeah. And you have one sentence you can answer. So open rate, I don't ever understand. There's a school of thought out there that like subject lines don't count, which I just don't get.
Taking
the analogy of you having someone come in, your email's like someone coming into your living room and having a cup of coffee with you. Well, if they haven't knocked on the door and opened the door, how do they go into your living room, right? That's the subject line is that you have. So that's one great way to stand out. And there's some really easy principles that I think if you're a little bit conservative, might make you feel a tiny bit uncomfortable. But people open subject lines that have question marks in them.
Mm.
That are just sort of open-ended and they provide curiosity. Like, are you sure? Question mark? It's like, I would open that. Am I sure about what? What is he talking about? What is going on?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You know, like, or dot, dot, dot. He really couldn't believe what happened. Dot, dot, dot. You want to know what the story is inside. And inside, you could have a story about what happened to one of your patients, right? Well, it could be a little case study about one of your patients. I feel like the subject line is one of the great ways. I think there's another way to break through is not to be afraid. It's not necessarily, you don't necessarily need to use this in every single email, but there are a lot of people, we have a visual world right now. So you could have images. You could have, I mean, I mentioned earlier, there's some really funny cartoons about going to the dentist. You could share one of those. You could share an image of your office. Definitely, there's a lot of ways of putting a visual element into your email that makes it more fun and more engaging.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I do, as you well know, is I tell stories, right? And people love stories. It doesn't have to be a story about you either. It could be a story that people are reading in the news right now. I mean, you guys are, right now the news is alight with everything that's happening with Australia and the fires, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So you could bring that in somehow and talk about that. So you become, I guess the point of all that is you, by doing all of those things, you're leaning into their world rather than what most people are asking people to do in the inbox, which is to lean into our world.
Yeah, nice.
Right?
Yeah.
The whole point is we need to enter the world, the conversation that's in their head that might not necessarily be about dentistry, but it's about their lives.
Totally.
And also there's this whole element, which we haven't talked about, which is dentistry. There's a, if you will, a sort of a superficial side about it, which is looking great. People get self-conscious about their mouth.
They really do. That happens all the time. And so you're absolutely right.
We should talk about it.
We should totally talk about it.
Yeah, and people are afraid to talk about it, but we should talk about it because, you know, I know people who are afraid to smile because they're embarrassed about their teeth.
Yeah.
That's a real pain point that people, all your patients, I would say 100% of the people listening to this, your patients are thinking about that. Right? So talk about it.
It's really funny, Sue. We did an exercise at a workshop a little while ago, and the room was full of people from the dental world, right? So everyone in that room worked in dentistry in one capacity or another. And it was an exercise in questioning. And what we were trying to uncover was that what was the secret dental wish of the person that you were speaking to in the room? And without exception, every single person in that room had a secret dental wish, something that they hadn't really told anyone, something that they wanted to change about their smile, their teeth, their whatever it is, right? And literally everyone, I'm not joking. And so what really struck me is if every single one of us in that room who works in dentistry has a secret dental wish, and the emphasis is on secret, what's the chances that our patients have a secret dental wish or they're worried about something? And what you're saying is that email is a perfect way to start that conversation, right?
Right, because I guess in not trying to be so perfect in how we present ourselves, we talk like human beings about vulnerabilities. Mm. They are vulnerabilities. Ours, it doesn't make you weaker. It makes you
stronger.
Yeah. And I feel like that, I'd start off slowly because I think that's this mindset that takes a little bit. Just experiment with it slowly about talking about vulnerabilities a little bit.
Yeah.
And you'll see the response because that's why it's so hard to break through the clutter in the inbox because it's like this never ending sea of sameness.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's insane. I mean, the insane thing about it is, I think the average individual receives like 150 emails, which is crazy, right?
Wow. 150.
149 of them are, you know what? Not great.
Yeah.
I won't use a bad word here, but you can read between the lines. It's just really, I mean, every single one of you can go into your inbox. And you'll see, it's just everything is the same. It's sell, sell, sell. It's, I am perfect. Here is what my perfect thing is for you. That's not real life. And that's not what resonates with people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no place where people feel more vulnerable than the dental office.
Yeah. So if you were giving advice to someone who's listening to this podcast and they said, righto, I'm keen to do something with email, what would be the first thing that they should do?
Well, as you know, I always look at things strategically. Yeah, so the first thing I would do is I would look at what it is that you want to achieve in the next, let's just say 3 to 6 months.
Yep.
What it is that you want to do and then start mapping out. So I would start that. That's like sort of map out what it is that you want to do in the next 6 months.
Yep.
And then what you want to do is in between those, whatever they are, promotions or offers that you're going to have, make sure that you have, that you embed some nurturing sequences so that you are paving the road for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, I should probably have said this first, there's certain automated sequences that you need to make sure that you have in there.
Yeah.
Totally. You want to welcome people.
Mm-hmm.
You want to explain to them, like if someone's coming into procedure, you could have a 2-email sequence of, you're coming in on Wednesday, this is what you can expect, right? Yeah. You can have those. So you can have like these automated sequences that are automatically triggered if someone comes into your office. And then you can always, if someone hasn't responded to your emails within 90 days, you can have a little sequence, which
are you still there,
invites kind of them to re-engage.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. So that's really sound advice. Now, for the listeners who want to find out more about you and where you hang out and get in touch with you, what's the best place for them or best way for them to do that?
Okay, so you can look at my site, which is, this is real easy, suerice.com.
that is the easiest website ever.
And if you want to reach out to me through email, funny that I would suggest that, it would be sue@suerice.com and just put in the subject line, you know, Dr. Jesse Green or something so that I know that you're coming from this podcast.
Yeah, cool.
So I can give you special treatment.
There you go. There you go. Now, Sue, you've been incredibly generous with your time, your wisdom, your knowledge tonight, and I really thank you. And you're a great mate and I appreciate all the work that we've done together as well. And I know from firsthand experience, what you're saying here absolutely works. It works a treat. So ladies and gents, if you're thinking about email, I'd really encourage you to just get started, do something, as Sue said, take that first step and really implement it into your practice, even if it's bit by bit, that's okay. But it is a really powerful tool that I think is really underutilized and is a missing piece in most people's marketing toolkit. Sue, thank you so much for all that you've shared tonight. You've been an absolute gem, as always. So my greatest thanks to you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.